This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop. Coming up, we'll review the week's top stories about this week's veto session at the Illinois State House and what could be done about the controversial Safety Act. We'll also get commentary from the Center Square publisher Chris Krug and executive editor Dan McCaleb about those stories, Amendment 1, the budget, and more. That's ahead with Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. Listen to all our podcasts at americastalking.com. I'm Greg Bishop.
Are you looking for an interview podcast where you can be entertained and informed? Come check out our new podcast, America's Talking, to hear conversations with great stand-up comedians like Mark Norman.
Norm, made you feel smarter than him, even though he was smarter than you.
As well as with leaders in the United States, like former Ambassador Andrew Bremberg.
I remember the fall of the evil empire. When the wall fell, every adult I saw was crying.
I'm your host, Austin Berg, and I want you to join the conversation on our new podcast, America's Talking, right now on Spotify.
This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop. Here are some of the top stories from the past week. Don't expect big changes to the Safety Act before the end of the year, though something is expected. The measure includes the Pretrial Fairness Act, which ends cash bail statewide January 1st, making Illinois the first state to do so. Chicago State Senator Robert Peters helped usher the bill through the legislature in January 2021. Now, after last week's election, he said the dynamics have changed.
People wanted to either gut it or backdoor gut it. That is not what we're doing. We're willing to make sure that we, deal with the technical changes, make sure that the implementation goes well, but we are not going to fall into the idea of gutting it.
Peters wouldn't speak to the consolidated lawsuit state's attorneys and sheriffs have filed challenging the measure. He said there will be technical fixes, but didn't elaborate.
Those are literally ongoing conversations. I think that's where we're at. The idea and the effort is to get this done before January 1st.
Beecher City Republican State Representative Blaine Wilhauer opposes the measure. He said his constituents are concerned about public safety.
We're open to some pretrial changes on this, but we can't just go all or nothing. We can't go all criminals, nothing for the victims.
Wilhauer said it may require a political sea change.
So it's always an all or nothing proposition with the Democrats here. So until there's some electoral checks on these people, they're just going to do whatever they want.
Lawmakers canceled Thursday's session. They're back for three scheduled days, the week after Thanksgiving, before the end of the year. In a bill that was introduced last spring, the Illinois Senate has voted to have state-run entities divest from Russian assets. Kevin Bessler has the story.
The move is a response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The bill divests from Russian debt, welcomes Ukrainian refugees to Illinois, and develops a method for detecting Russian money laundering in local real estate. Jared Ratecki is from the Better Government Association.
You kind of want to look at these investments holistically, not so much what they're making in investment returns, but what you're getting kind of in the overall damage to things. And people don't want to be putting investments at the state level in a war effort that's this unpopular.
The measure now goes back to the House for concurrence before it heads to the governor for his signature. Governor J.B. Pritzker has called on state employee pension systems to review their portfolios for divestment possibilities. I'm Kevin Bessler.
With state lawmakers in Springfield for veto session and no vetoes from the governor to deal with, some are urging action to address the scourge of fentanyl. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that's making its way into street drugs and is becoming a leading cause of death among young people. Overdose deaths in Illinois have increased from 87 in 2013 to 2,672 in 2021. Republican State Senator Sally Turner said that's staggering and lawmakers have to act.
I believe the General Assembly should use the next 2 weeks to seriously consider legislation that I filed to help combat the ongoing fentanyl poisoning and synthetic opioid epidemic that's already claimed thousands of lives in Illinois.
Turner's Senate Bill 4221 would enhance penalties for a variety of fentanyl offenses.
It is our impassioned hope that this will address the overwhelming increase of overdosing and dying from fake pills that are made to look like prescription opioids or stimulants.
Republican State Senator Sue Rezin said the problem of overdose deaths across the country is reaching the equivalent of a commercial airliner crash killing everyone on board every day.
If that scenario, God forbid, happened, it would be on national news every single day, top story for the next month. But yet, we have these fentanyl poisoning deaths across the country at the same numbers, and we hear nothing about it.
Rezin acknowledged there are some stories below the fold, but the issue needs to be more prominent and lawmakers should act. Turner's bill remains in committee. Lawmakers are back in session the week after Thanksgiving. Parents of students from across the state involved with the state's Invest in Kids School Choice Pilot Program are lobbying Illinois lawmakers to make it permanent. Andrew Hensel has more.
The program allows donors to get a 75% income tax credit towards donations to fund school choice scholarships for qualified families throughout the state. The program is set to sunset in 2024, but with lawmakers in veto session, parents are looking for an extension. Eric Ruiz of Joliet, a parent with students involved in the program, explained the goal of coming to Springfield.
Get rid of the sunset and make this a permanent for certainty. We don't know what the future is going to hold, so I want my kids to continue there.
Adriana Garcia of Champaign said what her kids have accomplished could not have been done without the program.
I have one student that has graduated as a recipient from the scholarship, currently a sophomore at the University of Illinois. There is no way that I would be able to do this without the assistance of these scholarships.
I'm Andrew Hensel.
The Predatory Loan Prevention Act establishes a 36% interest rate cap on consumer loans in Illinois, but critics say some lenders are using a loophole to get around the cap. Kevin Bessler has details.
The Woodstock Institute is lobbying to get legislation passed to close those loopholes. A borrower who goes by the name of Jasmine says she was surprised to see that she was paying 150% interest on a loan with the law in place.
Yes, actually, I am, because no one should be charging triple interest rates. That's ridiculous.
Jasmine recommends doing your research before you sign on the dotted line.
I know people take out loans because they also feel like there isn't another option, but I'm here to just tell and share with people that there is another option. You're just not looking hard enough.
A Sangamon County judge issued a preliminary injunction against the 36% cap after pawnbrokers filed a lawsuit against the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. I'm Kevin Bessler.
The Illinois Prisoner Review Board doesn't have any suggestions on how to address what state lawmakers characterize as a game of cat and mouse over appointees to the board. The PRB reviews parole requests and what to do with people who violate conditions of release. Earlier this year, state senators rejected several of the governor's appointees to the board. They didn't have enough members to make decisions. PRB General Counsel Kahala Clay said Tuesday at a legislative audit commission hearing, that's changed.
Thankfully, we have had several board members added over the last couple of months and weeks, and we've been back up to a quorum for some time.
Governor J.B. Pritzker has been criticized for appointing PRB members and then withdrawing them before a deadline for Senate approval, only to then reappoint them. State Senator Jason Berrickman told PRB Chief Edith Krigler that it's like a game of cat and mouse.
The response is that some of this is due to a comprehensive vetting process that is done for appointees. What does that vetting process entail?
Senator, I have no idea. We don't do the vetting. The governor's office does the vetting.
Berrickman requested future meetings with the governor's office and the PRB to determine the vetting process. There are three vacancies. Since COVID-19, there's been a spike in the number of clemency hearings. Nicole Damhoff, PRB chief administrative officer, said the number won't be as high as the 4,000 estimated for this year, but it'll still be elevated.
We're definitely on track for about 1,500 to 2,000 for 2022.
The most recent audit of the PRB found a variety of issues with the agency, including lax oversight of state property and contractual services. The amendment making collective bargaining a right enshrined in Illinois' constitutions passed after receiving the required amount of support from voters. Andrew Hensel has that story.
Amendment 1 aims to codify collective bargaining in the Illinois Constitution. However, opponents warn it could raise taxes on Illinoisans. Current projections show the amendment has earned the support of 53% of all voters casting a ballot in the election, exceeding the simple majority of all voters' threshold needed to pass. Todd Meisch of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, a group that has opposed the measure, said that the group is still in wait-and-see mode.
We got to see the final numbers. Again, I'm a little bit skeptical that you only end up at 58% on those people voting on it and that they're still going to hit the 50% plus.
The Workers' Rights Foundation, a leading supporter of the measure, released a statement Tuesday after the news of the approval, claiming the victory is a historic moment for workers and will kickstart our economy. The measure is expected to be in effect December 9th when the final vote is certified by the Illinois State Board of Elections. I'm Andrew Hensel.
With Republicans continuing in the supermajority of the Illinois State House, changes are being made in the party's leadership. House Republicans selected Savannah State Representative Tony McCombie this week to lead the Republican caucus for the next 2 years. How will Republicans remain relevant with a caucus that'll be shrinking?
I'm going to do what I do now. I have friends on both sides of the aisle. I work to develop relationships and friendships, and you may all not know me, but I'm very honest and transparent, and I'll continue that kind of conversation with the folks across the aisle.
Downers Grove Republican State Senator John Curran was selected to lead Republicans in the Senate, where the GOP gained a seat but remains in the minority. He said that he'll work to bring balance.
We have to work within this process to advocate for lower taxes, relief for families in Illinois, and with that consistent message, and at the same time, being a participant in the process, we will bring a better product, better result.
Mega donors dominated the election cycle, with the governor giving himself and Democrats more than $140 million. Republicans were buoyed by tens of millions from conservative billionaires in the primary and general election. McCombie said the party has to find a better way.
The thing that we cannot do as a Republican Party is rely on one, two, or three big mega donors.
Curran agreed.
It's incredibly important that we attract more smaller donors. We diversify our fundraising operation. We are getting outspent in races by multipliers of 4 and 5 to 1. And that is not sustainable. It's not good for Illinois, and it's not good for the public policy that gets effectuated here in the Capitol.
Democrats who gained seats in the House but lost in the Senate will maintain leadership in House Speaker Chris Welch and Senate President Don Harmon. And it's going to cost more than ever for those Thanksgiving Day dinner staples this year. Kevin Bessler has that story.
Illinois shoppers taking part in the 37th Annual American Farm Bureau Federation's Thanksgiving Cost Survey reported a statewide average price of $65.53 for a classic Thanksgiving meal for 10, compared to about $58 last year. Mike Doherty, senior economist with the Illinois Farm Bureau, says you can blame overall inflation.
Inflation meaning the general rise in all costs of everything we're buying, labor, transportation, energy costs, packaging costs, they're all going up.
Doherty says the price of a turkey is up partly due to rising costs for feed.
Corn is up higher than it was last year. Soybean meal is up a little bit too. So those would add pretty directly to the cost of a turkey.
The national cost of a turkey increased 21% over last year. In total, 11 food items increased in average price, and only one item, cranberries, decreased. I'm Kevin Bessler.
And those are the top stories from the past week for Illinois. Find more online at americastalking.com. Coming up for Illinois in Focus, commentary from the Center Square publisher Chris Krug and executive editor Dan McCaleb. This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop.
Are you looking for a new podcast where you can get your national news from a taxpayer's perspective? Check out the America in Focus podcast featuring the Center Square's Dan McCaleb.
This jobs report, in some ways, it contradicts what I'm seeing anecdotally.
And Casey Harper.
And it's not just the economy. He has a 28% approval on the economy, but he also has 36% approval on foreign policy.
Find America in Focus wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe. That's America in Focus, a news podcast from a taxpayer's perspective.
Welcome back to the Illinois in Focus podcast. This is the Crosstalk segment commentary powered by the Center Square. I'm Chris Krug, president of the Franklin News Foundation and publisher of the Center Square, joined by my friend and colleague, executive editor of the Center Square, Dan McCaleb. Dan, what's up?
Hey, it looks like, doesn't look like winter has arrived this week in parts of Illinois. Got some snow our way up in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, and it is cold.
Yeah. We were living right. You know, it was a good fall. I mean, obviously the calendar doesn't flip, you know, or the season doesn't change until we get to the 21st of December and flip over into winter. But winter sure feels like it's here. Among all the reasons to love Illinois, winter is just one of them. It's just a beautiful time of the year where the streets are covered with slush and your car starts to rust. Days are like, I don't know, like 4 hours of sunlight. You know, it's just a terrific, terrific time of the year.
At least we're not Buffalo.
Yeah, fair enough. In fact, that could be Chicago's new slogan. At least we're not Buffalo. Dan, and you know what? We're on the precipice of Thanksgiving. So, I'm going to straighten up and change my attitude here because, I mean, I got plenty of things to be thankful for, plenty of things to be grateful for. I'm not about to talk about any of those in the next probably 20 minutes or so, but nonetheless, I'm a pretty grateful person and feel blessed. The Safety Act, Dan, you and I have exhausted a lot of time and effort in trying to make sense of this law, which is going onto the books officially January 1st. You know, the biggest piece of it, of course, is cashless bail, which means that you don't have to put up any money to get out of police custody unless you pose a significant threat to a specific individual, I believe is how the law is written, which means that, you know, if you commit a crime, a violent crime, even, that you will be basically set free. We are in veto session in Springfield this week, Dan, and it had been discussed prior to the election and even Governor J.B. Pritzker to defer any conversations around the Safety Act said that it would be tweaked. I believe that was the word that he used. It is not looking like it's going to be tweaked. It's not looking like a whole lot of anything is happening with this act. At least through the first week of the veto session, we've seen nothing. We're taping this on, just FYI, we're taping this on Thursday, November 17th.
Yeah, so it you are correct. First week of 2 weeks, not even two full weeks, a veto session is now behind us. Absolutely nothing happened with the Safety Act. The only thing that's really happened is Democrats have come out and said, you know, they're not making substantive changes to the Safety Act. The cashless bail provision is more likely than not going to be put into effect on January 1st. Lawmakers are coming back to Springfield the week after Thanksgiving to finish out veto session, but Democrats have pretty much made it clear now that there are going to be no sweeping changes to the cashless bail provision of the Safety Act, only technical, quote-unquote, technical changes. Not sure what that means. Maybe cleaning up some language, but it looks like the cashless bail provision is going to go into effect January 1st with one potential caveat. There are dozens of consolidated lawsuits that are going to be heard in December. A number of states' attorneys and sheriff's offices challenged the constitutionality of certain provisions in the Safety Act. Those cases were all consolidated into a single case, and that's going to go to court in December. So for those who are hoping and wanting the cashless bail provision to go away, to be overhauled. It looks like their last hope is through the court system.
Yeah. And I mean, and of course that, you know, that case would be heard here in Illinois. Well, I hope you like the law. Take some time to read it. Do yourself a favor. And, you know, as of January 1st, keep your head on a swivel if you live in the state of Illinois, because it will not be the purge. I'm not going to go there. I don't agree with that thinking. But I also have absolutely no faith in this legislation to do what it is supposed to do. And in theory, you know, this is a criminal justice reform bill that addresses poor people who are charged with crimes who cannot get out of jail, which is messed up, right? We both agree that's messed up for lower level crimes.
Exactly.
But for violent crimes, hey, guess what? Rotten jail, as far as I'm concerned. If you're a threat to other people and you've demonstrated that you're a threat to other people by committing a violent crime, no mercy for you. I'm sorry. There's no place in society for you. You should not be turned free. Sorry about that. I mean, I'm not going to soft pedal. If the state legislature can't figure this out, I would chalk that up to being, frankly, the talk that we had leading up to it that included the governor, J.B. Pritzker, that included the attorney general, Kwame Rule. And any single person who is connected to the creation of this legislation, you're a liar for saying that it would be addressed and it would be tweaked. If this isn't significantly changed so that the state's attorneys in the 102 counties around the state of Illinois can at least understand it to implement it, you're a liar. And you lied to people for your own political benefit in this past election. Period, paragraph.
And that's the concern, that it was so vaguely and broadly written that it's going to probably be enforced differently across the state of Illinois. Some states' attorneys have said the way they interpret it, you know, they're going to have to not fully empty their jails, but release significant amounts of people that are currently being held during the pretrial process. And Democrats in Springfield this week have pretty much said, too bad. That's the way it's going to be. To get their side in there, for them, they claim it is an equity issue, as you mentioned. When folks are arrested, those who have greater means, those who make more money, are able to post a money bond currently. Those lower income folks, many from the minority communities, are not able to post cash bail to get out before their trial. So they claim it's an equity issue. And there has been inequities in the criminal justice system, no doubt about it.
For sure.
Yeah. And I'm 100% with you, though, that for nonviolent lower level crimes, yes, maybe this is a good idea.
Goes too far. We spent the entire campaign season hearing about this person or that person being too extreme. I mean, like they were on the menu at Taco Bell. Too extreme. You know what? This is it. Frankly, it's insane legislation. The nonsense has been called out. Illinois is a laughingstock. Illinoisans are like, what in the world are you trying to do? And the state legislature's like, hey, we're going to make some technical changes. Baloney.
Illinois will be the only state in the country effective January 1st, unless the court blocks it. It's the Kankakee County District Court that has oversight over the consolidated lawsuits now. Unless that court blocks it, Illinois will become the only state in the country with a statewide cashless bail program.
Way to go, Illinois. Nice job. Dan, I want to switch it up, still stay in Springfield, talk about what's being discussed there. There's a piece of legislature that's being discussed that would enhance penalties in Illinois for distributing drugs that are found to contain fentanyl. When we talk about the bigger, broader issues in national security, you and I, and just the conversations that we have, and then certainly, you know, on the Illinois in Focus podcast and American in Focus podcast, and the idea of like fentanyl coming into Mexico, in all likelihood from China, being distributed across the United States, and even being like sort of used as an additive to hype up certain street drugs, in particular, like hydrocodone and oxycodone and OxyContin and things of that nature, opioid type medications. Fentanyl is crazy dangerous. It's super powerful. We really haven't done anything meaningful to address it here in the state of Illinois. So what is being discussed, and what's the likelihood that Illinois would have the political will to do something smart around something as dangerous as fentanyl?
Well, to answer that last question.
Am I asking too much there?
I'll answer that last question first. Illinois is not going to do anything smart to address the fentanyl.
All right. Moving on to the next subject then. No, I'm kidding.
Fentanyl has become a major national concern, a crisis in the last couple of years. As you mentioned, the precursors of fentanyl are made in China. They're shipped to the Mexican drug cartels who control much of the country. And the drug cartels manufacture them into what is known now as fentanyl. And they distribute them across what is pretty much an open border at the southern border with Mexico into Texas and into Arizona, into California, et cetera. And then they get distributed across the country. Fentanyl is now the leading cause of death of Americans ages 18 to 45. As we reported this week at thecentersquare.com, Illinois has the eighth highest total number of fentanyl deaths in the country. It is a significant, significant health crisis in this country, in this state of Illinois. Republicans during veto session this week introduced legislation that would essentially enhance penalties for those who distribute fentanyl. Of course, we just talked about the cashless bail provision that's going into effect January 1st. Democrats who control Springfield, who control state government, don't want people to go to jail. This is a Republican filed bill to enhance penalties, increase jail time, etc. It has no shot of passing because of Democrat supermajorities in the House and the Senate, and Governor Pritzker, of course, having veto authority of it.
Okay, I get it. But why play politics with something like fentanyl? I mean, if the Republicans, you know, who are criticized for not bringing ideas forward. I mean, to be fair, I mean, the Democrats, you know, the Republicans say, hey, you know, you guys have a supermajority. Doesn't matter if we bring ideas forward. Democrats say, well, you never bring ideas forward. Neither is correct. Certainly, though, Republican ideas or conservative ideas that are brought forward in the Illinois legislature like triples into Joe Jackson's glove go to die. But around an issue like this, which kills, just to double check, it kills Black people. It kills Latino people. It kills Asian people. It kills white people. If there were polka-dotted people, fentanyl would kill them too.
Absolutely. I'm actually looking at one of our stories that we published this week that contains a photo of a penny. And next to the penny is this really tiny little amount of fentanyl. And essentially what drug enforcement agents say is that very minute amount of fentanyl is all that's needed to kill a human adult.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much. It is extremely deadly. There are some Florida's attorney general, Ashley Moody, and other attorney generals across the country have called for the federal government to declare fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction because of how quickly and widely it can kill a number of people. So it should be addressed.
Yeah.
And now, I guess let me walk back just a little bit. I don't expect Democrats to pass this Republican legislation to enhance criminal penalties for distribution of fentanyl. They haven't taken any action yet, so they still could. I just don't think they will.
That's a shame where partisanship gets in the way of actually taking care of the safety of the people who have elected you to serve. It's embarrassing that we cannot have discussions about things that are important in this state. We just can't do it. It's the ramrod agenda week after week during the regular legislative sessions, and now in the veto sessions, with all the promises that were made about, you know, working together and, you know, and creating a better Illinois. Baloney. And in that same vein, it appears that Illinois Amendment 1 has passed, one of the more complex mechanisms for passage of a vote. Amendment 1, which is, you know, was dubbed the Workers' Rights Amendment, which is actually more like placing certain workers' rights above all other Illinoisans forever, basically, constitutionally, that ballot initiative appears to have passed. It needed to have either 60% of the vote or 50% plus one of all votes cast, or all ballots cast, I should say. It appears that it is won. The AP has called it. Chicago Tribune has called it. And those would frankly be the only two, you know, media organizations that I would even consider being capable of calling races in the state of Illinois. Votes are still not fully tabulated. They won't be certified until December, but it certainly looks like Amendment 1 passed. Who wins? Who loses, Dan?
So it did not pass by the 60% threshold, but it looks like it's going to pass by the 50% plus one threshold of those who specifically voted on that amendment. And taxpayers are going to be the big losers here. It essentially enshrines public sector workers' unions, teachers' unions, state government workers' unions, those folks, their collective bargaining rights in the state constitution. The Illinois legislature can't do anything to change it. The only way it could be changed is with another constitutional amendment to undo it, which, you know, isn't going to be on the ballot anytime soon. So what it does is gives public sector employee unions the power to bargain almost over almost anything when their contracts come up, which gives them more leverage to hike their salaries, to hike their benefits, etc., which means taxpayers are going to have to pay more. There are some analyses out there that in the next 3 to 4 years, the average property taxes that you and me and everyone else who owns a home or a business are going to increase by more than $2,000. We already have the second highest property taxes. We already pay the second highest property taxes in the nation. We might be paying the highest property taxes in the nation, surpassing New Jersey in a couple of years because this has passed.
For those who didn't know what you were voting for and voted yes, if you could do me a favor and just send me an email and explain to me why you did that, I would just like to better understand you and understand what it was that you were thinking about or what you thought this might do. I struggle to understand how initiatives like this, which so very clearly represent the interests of a few and place the interests of a few above the interests of everyone else, how they pass, how things like this get done. It almost happened with the progressive tax last time around. the state of Illinois is just going out of its way. The government as we have it today is going out of its way to just try to redistribute as much wealth as it possibly can to a very specific class of workers. It's pretty transparent.
Yeah, and how has that worked for the state over the last 10 years when residents, taxpayers are fleeing the state because of things like high taxes, things like corruption in state government? This is only going to enhance that. Illinois' population is going to continue to decline compared to other states.
The people who are leaving the wreckage behind. And, you know, they're leaving lives and families and friends behind. People are not moving to Illinois. They're not moving to Illinois. Dan, school choice here in Illinois is literally a blip. It barely exists. There's one program. It's very, 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 very small. It has a cap on it. And there's been efforts to enhance it over time, but that is met with resistance because school choice is not wanted here. So what's the latest on this?
Under the previous administration of former Republican Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner, Illinois finally, of course, the former governor had to make all kinds of concessions to get this passed, passed what is called the Invest in Children Act. And that allows individuals to donate their own money for a 75% tax credit to the scholarship program. And the scholarship money then can go to low income families whose public school is not working for them, is not working for their child, for their student. So they can send them to a school of their choice and pay tuition to that school of their choice. When it was passed, it had a sunset date of 2024, which of course is just around the corner. The beneficiaries of the scholarship program, these low-income parents and other families, are begging state lawmakers to extend it. Governor Pritzker, 4 years ago, when he was first campaigning for office, said he was going to end the program. He's not for school choice. Avid supporter of public teachers unions who are against it. But when he got into office, he got a lot of pressure from these low income families.
Oh, yeah.
That were able to send their kids to quality schools,
right,
only because of this scholarship program.
Because the program actually works and the idea actually benefits people's lives.
Yes. So he backed off that claim, but now that it's set to sunset in 2024, does Governor Pritzker and the Democratic-controlled legislature have the foresight to extend it? That's the question.
Here's my question. Do they have the political will to stand up to the education unions to do what's right? And I mean that's what this is really all about, right? I mean, it's protectionism, you know? I mean, so will they do that? Here, I'm going to, this isn't on the board at the sports book at the casino. My guess is no. Yeah. I think that this thing will at the very least maintain its minimum cap level and just be pushed off in the corner again.
Yeah. I don't see Democrats and Governor Pritzker getting behind extending the program because the teachers' unions are so dead set against it. And I don't see them having the political will to buck the teachers' unions on this topic. I hope I'm wrong. I seriously hope I'm wrong. And I will shout them out, congratulate them, praise them if they do actually extend it. I just don't see them doing it.
Yeah. Last thing I have on my notes for today would be to talk to you about budget projections. Center Square in Illinois has reported on that. Of course, you know, I mean, one of the things that I think that the Center Square does better than just about any other news outlet in the country is to dig into economic data and make sense of it, you know, just so we can have conversations about it. You know, it's not the esoteric solutions oriented journalism that, you know, that gets peddled, you know, with so many different places around the country that just talks about the solving of problems. Doesn't talk about the actual like challenges in solving those problems. The economics of Illinois have been in question for decades. We have a crazy problem with pensions that, frankly, it defies explanation. In comparison with other states around the United States, there's not a single state that has more pension obligation and inability to pay it than Illinois. When Governor Pritzker ran for re-election against Darren Bailey this year, it must have been, if it was once, it was five dozen times said that he had balanced the budget 4 years in a row. The Illinois budget is not balanced, and the Illinois budget was balanced in the past 2 years with federal money that came to the state as part of COVID relief. The budget would have to shrink to go back to the size that it was before COVID for it to be actually balanced without there being massive tax increases. So how in the world are we going to have a five-year budget projection that doesn't rely on any help from Washington, D.C.? Not that I'm suggesting that we want that.
Because the projection is not true. It leaves out.
Okay.
And this is not me saying this. This is an expert analyst of government accounting practices and government spending. I'm talking about Truth in Accounting, a Chicago-based nonprofit that looks closely at government's budgets, spending habits, revenue projections, et cetera, not just in Illinois, but across the country. They analyze all state governments, many municipal governments, and Truth in Accounting came out and it essentially said Illinois is lying in its five-year budget projections. And one of the main culprits of that, you mentioned it, is the state's public pension debt. Illinois doesn't account for its pension obligations when it puts out these five-year projections. And Sheila Weinberg, who leads Truth in Accounting, she called him out for it this week and said, no, this is not real. This is not true. You're not including your legacy costs.
Mm-hmm.
And the massive debt that we've accumulated over 40 years of ignoring our pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as you mentioned, with the billions and billions of federal dollars we've gotten over the past couple years, Illinois has increased its spending, utilizing that federal money, which is not coming again. And in a year or 2 years down the road, Illinois is going to have a massive budget hole.
Yeah, I'm looking at these numbers, and the governor's report indicates that the state, you know, this is straight from our reporting. The governor's report indicates the state will contribute $5.9 billion to the teacher's retirement system, which, Dan, is one of like what, six?
Five state Illinois-controlled.
That's right. There are five. So let me read that line again. The governor's report indicates that the state will contribute $5.9 billion to the teacher's retirement system. However, according to the TRS, teacher's retirement system, for actuaries to adequately fund the system, $9.1 billion should be contributed. Therefore, the system will be shortchanged by $3.2 billion. So you're going to miss it. By frankly, I mean, the way that actually works, by more than half of what your contribution actually is. So that variance of $3.2 billion on a payment or a planned payment of $5.9 billion is a miss of 50%. It's not even that's like kicking a field goal into the stands sideways. I mean, you're not missing the goalpost. You're not kicking the ball forward.
Yeah, and sadly, this has been going on for far too long. And honestly, if you're, you know, a recent college graduate and you're looking for a stable job, I don't know that you pick a state job, including teachers in Illinois, because 10, 20 years from now, the pension system could be insolvent if nothing is drastically done. Mm. And the legislature and the governor have shown that they're not interested in doing anything drastic. They're interested in continuing to hide the numbers in these five-year budget projections that show the budget is balanced. But people who know better dig into the numbers and have called them out. And sadly, you know, there's no political will to do this or just about anything smart in Springfield.
Mm. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, this is not intended to be the most depressing 40 minutes of my day, but gee whiz, man, there's a lot that needs to be done here in Illinois that needs to be addressed. And I look forward to seeing what the Center Square will be working on in the weeks to come, because there's a lot going on. And, you know, as we run up to a new session start in January. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much, frankly, so much going on right now in the state.
Yeah. And a lot to get done that likely is not going to get done.
Yeah. Danny, I appreciate it. For Dan McHale, this has been Chris Krug. You've been listening to the Crosstalk segment commentary powered by the Center Square inside the Illinois In Focus podcast. Now let's send you over to Greg Bishop for a look at what the Center Square will be working on next week. And happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Next week, the team will continue to monitor any activity on key issues that could come up in the final week of veto session, the week after the Thanksgiving holiday. This has been Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop.